we have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Fear itself. Fear itself. Fear itself. Well, they will not be judged by the color of the man.
To fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air, we shall never surrender.
Hi, prepper brothers and sisters, you arrived at the bunker. Grab a cup of joe, a stout tea, or maybe your favorite adult beverage. This is the prepper's place for open discussion on whatever the hell we want, brought to you whatever the hell way we want. This is the new format of the OPS Bunker, a prepper survivalist show. So sit down, kick back, post up, relax, and welcome to the bunker. Preppers, survivalists, off-gridders, homesteaders, and the like. Welcome to Topps Bunker, a podcast for preppers. Leave a voicemail to get on the show, speakpipe.com/tops, or the live message option on Facebook groups, Topps Bunker, or email us at shtf@toppsbunker.com. I want to thank you guys for joining us, and if you're new to the show, welcome to the bunker. If you enjoy listening to this show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review. Those 5-star reviews and downloads help decide the order in which podcasts appear in the search lists. Good or bad, of course, good is better. 5 stars is best. Your feedback is much appreciated. We got a great show for you tonight. Tonight, we'll be talking with Frank Deegan of the Irish Survivalist Group. Frank is not only a returning guest, but he's also a longtime listener and a good friend of the show, and he's becoming quite the celebrity on his island.
You mean Ireland?
Yeah, it's mine.
We're going to jump right in with our conversation with him. Here's Frank Deegan of the Irish Survivalist Group.
Oh, I'm good. And you guys, how's the weather there?
It's not bad. It's actually pretty nice. It's going into summertime, you know, and I was expecting storms yesterday, but they didn't show up. But today we got them, so.
We're here the same. We've had 8 months of rain, and the farmers can't get the crops in the ground here. So if they try putting in tractors into the fields, they get bogged down. It's so bad. Yeah, I think it's the second dry day, and we see farmers busy trying to get into any area that has dried up a bit. So they're busy. They're going to miss crops this year. We're going to be under pressure food-wise, I think.
Well, and I was wondering about that. So Ireland is, you know, an island, obviously. So do you import a lot of stuff, or do you actually, you know, grow a lot of stuff yourselves?
That's a good question. We import and we export, but we turf is something some of the Ireland people would use for fires. Okay, I don't like it. It's not hot enough. We use coal here. If you want to light your fire at home, we use coal. I know you guys use timber. We are not allowed to cut any more turf because of Europe. So there's a ban on cutting turf in this country. But, and this is very good, the government is allowed to cut turf. They export it to Germany, and we have to buy it back in as a German product. Don't ask me how it works, but it's just wrong. It's wrong everywhere.
Are you saying turf or chert?
No, turf. T-H-U-R-F. Turf as right. in clay that's in the ground over thousands of years, and it's dried out, and it's very flammable.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's very much turf in the UK, in the States. It would be common in Ireland and parts of Europe, in damp conditions, you know, watery conditions.
Right.
It sits for hundreds of thousands. They found bodies in the turf bogs here when they're cutting them up, and the bodies are in good condition. They could be 3,000 or 4,000 years old, and they're in great condition. Google it as we're speaking. Turf bodies, you know, it's great.
So when you guys go out and do your camping excursions, I guess we call them, with the group, what do you guys burn for wood? You know, for fires?
No, we just cut down lumber all over the place to cut down dead standing trees if there's any left. But we have been on occasion. We brought anthracite, which is a very hot coal, where we run up into the -15s. You know, we go camping in that, and we were actually up in the mountain years ago. And I remember that there was an old house that was there during the Civil War in Ireland, and they had coal. I didn't realize it was anthracite, but they had coal all over the place. So we went up at 2 o'clock in the morning, came back down at 2:30, 3 o'clock. Delighted, lit this fire, and it was so hot we were in t-shirts and snow around us and frozen, but which is great. And then it all went down and went cold the next morning.
It seems like an entirely different world to us, because here it's all timber. You want to light a fire, you cut a tree down.
Well, we've done a lot of tree cutting here ourselves. And well, what happened was here as well during the storm. Say we had a few storms this year. The trees are down now, so we know which trees are down in 2 years' time when they dry out a bit. We use them for chopping, and we bring a chainsaw, cut it up, chop it up, and we use that particular tree. So one tree per camp is generally the rule. So don't try to overdo it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I saw that interview that you had posted on your group, your ISG group. What was that? What was that from?
Which one was this?
I think it was the most recent one where you were talking in a room and there was some other people that were chiming in.
Yes, that's Cork, County Kerry. That was a video production company, a young company, and they wanted to do promo videos. So they've been asking me over a few months, can I come and go down to Cork and do an interview with them? And I just happened to be there. I knew I was going to be there in one particular week. So I sat aside and I went in and I had a great chat with them. Just my complexion and the thing wasn't great either. It looked like I was after getting sunburned or something for sure. But yeah, that was just talking about survival in general. And they asked the people on the street in the city the same question, and I was giving them my answer as well. I enjoyed that one. That was pretty cool.
I enjoyed it too. I thought it was really good.
There's another one there I put up yesterday or the day before, and that one was shot 3 years ago during COVID or after COVID. I didn't realize that particular video was going to go public. So it went nationwide on our local national stations here. So I got a grueling over not being able to light a fire in the rain. So Gallon of petrol didn't go astray.
But, was that the sort of a comedian guy or something that was
in? Yes, yeah, that was him. Yep, that's him.
I saw that.
Yeah, that was... We just put that down to experience. That video footage was never supposed to go on TV, but we agreed to, because I think they were just making up a shortfall of minutes on their program. So that's okay. It's the deer was really a bummer for me, because we shot the deer 2 weeks earlier and one of the guys froze it. And when he was coming camping, he didn't give it enough time to defrost. So it was still partially frozen when we were putting it in the ground. And then about 4 hours later, after we put it in the ground, the light was starting to fade, so the camera crew wanted to see the deer. Okay, we'll have a look, and if it's not done, I knew it wasn't going to be done. We'll have a look and see, and so we can move on to something else before the light fades altogether. So they tried to true up them two pieces of footage. Yeah, you know, it didn't look great, but if you had to see the whole picture where the actual thing was frozen, and then eventually what we did do is we just cut a leg off. And we made a stew out of it, and that was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Nice. One of the best we've had in a long time. That was Robin Keeping. I haven't heard her talking on the way for a while.
Robin's doing good. Yep.
That's good.
Yep, she's doing great. She's doing a lot of gardening right now because we've got the greenhouse up and going, and you know, I'm putting together the chicken coop, so that's got to be get done quick, because the chickens which I've got they're ready to go in the coop. They're done with the brooder.
Yes.
So yeah, lots of chores, lots of projects going on.
I'd love to be able to do that myself, but my work is just so, we're completely flat out. We're 6 days a week, nearly 7 days a week, 8 hours a day, and it's just hard going what I do. So it's
You mind telling us what you do?
I work for a satellite engineering company. Basically, I come out and I install your satellites and get your broadband going and all that good stuff.
And you're that busy.
We are that busy, they're trying to get us to work on Sundays, yeah, at the
Wow.
moment. So we don't have enough engineers. We can't get enough staff. We can't get people to work. So
That's
it's
difficult here too. Yeah, it's very difficult to get people to work right now. It has been
I'm
since COVID, it's been very difficult.
unbelievable. I'm training a guy at the moment and he's only 30 something, and wow, it's like pulling teeth with him. He just doesn't get the work idea at all. I don't know what's gone wrong with the generation, to be honest. We just can't get him motivated.
It's the same here. I believe it's worldwide. It really is. It's this next generation of people. They just don't understand the work ethic
Yeah.
that we do.
Where's that going to lead to? That's where is that going to lead to? They're coming behind us.
It's a really good question.
It's one that I have mentioned a few times because Generation X, Generation Z, all of them ones. They spend their time on their phones and computers and playing war games. They don't see the real life at all. They don't see the real world.
Well, it's interesting on that interview you did. They were talking to some people in the streets, and they looked like they were young people, and they answered the question of survivalism and preparedness the same way that they do here. You know, they think they're screwed if they're not prepping. They don't really understand it. They feel like they're behind the times. They feel like, if it's going to end, it's going to end. What are you going to do about it?
It's the Cork in Ireland is a city that has a huge population of students. So there's some big universities there. So that's why there are young people there.
Yeah.
The one guy with his glasses gave his honest opinions, all right. So I didn't like his comment where he said survivalists have nothing to add. Was that plural or was that as a group? I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't like that comment either. The older gentleman, it looked like he was a little bit
Yes.
older.
Yeah. That's
I'm
good.
not really sure what I don't think he I think he's speaking out of turn because he doesn't really know. He doesn't know is the problem. He's ignorant.
And he did also say that he wouldn't be able to to handle a nuclear weapon or a nuclear disaster or
For attack, yeah.
world dominate. He's just given up at that stage, which most people have said to me, "Oh, I just give up." But human nature says no. We're always fighting animals. We'll always try to make it, get the next meal and get the food and water and stuff. So that is in our nature.
They think that it's work. They think that it's hard. They think that it's fear driven, what we do. What they don't understand is it's fun for us. It's what we
Yes,
enjoy doing.
absolutely. You heard the end of my conversation with the girls there that I can't understand why people don't do this for a hobby. I'm the same as you now. My mindset is the same. I love doing prepping. I actually do. I really enjoy it. It gives me a challenge. Let's throw a scenario and now we work on that scenario. 10 feet of snow. Okay, let's go 10 feet of snow. Our pipes are frozen. There's no water coming into the house. You can't go to the garden and your vegetables and stuff. So what you have in your house is whatever you got. If you can't get outside the door 10 feet of snow, you're in trouble.
I,
But
you know, I had
luckily,
the same situation this past winter in the new house, and Rhonda
yeah.
was in Texas, and I had the well froze up. I had no water coming into the house. I
There you
had to
go.
jump into gear, and use my knowledge and my experience and work it out.
Yeah. We generally have the pipes buried about 2 feet down here, so we don't have permafrost or anything, but we don't get severe cold in Ireland. We don't get severe heat either. We get a lot of rain, and then on a good year we might get excess sun. But there is systems out there for your setup where they have heated pipes to keep the water flowing from your well. How deep is the water?
At least 800 feet, maybe over 1,000 feet for sure. I'm thinking it's
Oh yeah.
around 1,500. Well, the well line that comes from the well head over to the house, there's only like a 3 foot section, and it's pretty well insulated. But we had like 7 straight days of -16 degrees, -15
Couldn't do
degrees,
it, yeah. Yeah.
and it just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. You need to maybe redo it. I don't know, cut grass and put it on top. Grass keeps nice and warm during the winter.
I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do, but I've got from now till next winter to figure it out.
Yeah, something to look at. We did the same thing here in our house. We have two lower gardens and a water pipe comes up a 6 foot drop. and that's exposed. So we did put lagging jackets on it, but I think it came off last year. So we were lucky we didn't have any cold weather this year, really, to be honest with you.
How cold does it get in Ireland for you guys?
The worst that ever got here in 2017 was about minus 15 Celsius, whatever that is in Fahrenheit. I'd say it's minus 20, minus 30. Would that be right?
Yeah, I just don't understand that, because you guys are farther north than we are on, you know, on the globe.
But we're the same latitude as Canada, only we have the Atlantic Ocean and the North Atlantic Drift Current keeping Ireland tepid, so we never freeze. Whereas Canada gets it from Alaska and the North Pole, we have the water, which is always warm, circulating around us, and it keeps us moist and warm at the same time. So I reckon the globalists that say that the ice caps are going to melt and change the density of the water, which means that the flow is going to be interrupted, and we could potentially freeze Europe out of it, because we're the beginning of Europe, if you know what I mean. Ireland, England, and then Europe. That's quite possible down the road, but I can't see it myself. But then you never know what they come up with. So they bring up these scenarios.
I can tell you for us, we get the Arctic wind come straight down through Canada. When it does and it hits the States, it's just like a river of Arctic air. It's unbelievable when it hits.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And the same air comes at us, but the air temperature in the water is warmer. And that rises and it blocks that cold front. We get a lot of cold fronts coming down from the north, but we don't get very many coming from the American side, from your side. But it's the same storm system. And by the time it gets to us, it's warmer. So we don't have that real cold. But saying that, the opposite spectrum then is in Russia and Siberian winds. We get Siberian highs coming down over Europe. And we had one of them there about 3 or 4 years ago, and we got snow for probably about a month, and we got really heavy stuff. So we got 6-7 feet.
That's not normal for you guys.
That isn't normal. No, that comes in once every 20 years. So that was enjoyable for us for the first few days. I had 4 days off. I thought it was great. Then I had to go back to work, so I didn't make that. But yeah, Siberian high, and of course, the whole country shut. Our country shuts down with a half an inch of snow. End of story. People can't operate.
So that brings another question up then. There should be a lot of preppers in your area. There should be, if that's the case.
You think so? Yeah, you think so. I'm constantly advocating prepping here. I'm always pushing it. I try not to be in people's face, you know, too much. You do see me on TV now and then, and on the radio or newspapers. And I'm always trying not to be like, we call it the mad preppers that we used to see in 10 years ago. What was the problem?
Oh, like Doomsday. The Doomsday preppers.
Yeah. I think that was all made for TV, pure and simple, just for entertainment purposes. But people got you heard that one in the interview as well. So she was trying to mention that name, and they couldn't think of it. They all think that we're the same, in the same league as them. So completely different. I'm trying to say that if we have floods or snow events or hurricane, we don't have hurricanes really. We actually do. We've had one or two, nothing huge. But it didn't have as much impact as they do in you guys around Florida or anywhere around there. Floods here would be, not as mad either. There's certain floods in certain areas, but that is the kind of content I went on to the radio before with, and told them about flooding in Middleton, County Cork, where people were overtaken within minutes. And I had to go down and work in one of them houses then later on the following week. And the girl was saying that, I don't mind my television going, I don't mind losing my skybox or my settees or my fridge. All I cared about was her filing cabinet, which is on the ground floor, and her marriage certificates, her debts, her mother's, her parents', her passports. All of the important information was in these files, and you can't get them back. That's a huge one. That's something I did push, and I said to people, look, you should really scan them onto a USB and have maybe two or three USBs and give them around to neighbors or family or friends, just in case something does happen. But they are very important documents. And that's the very same as my own. It's right beside me here. And if that never happened here, we'd be in right trouble. So that's another thing that I have to do. I'm going to scan them on so they're scanned correctly. But that just takes forever.
So Ireland deals with a lot of wetness then, I would say. From the pictures I've seen, from the things I've heard and talking with you, it seems like they get a lot of wet weather.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We get so much rain here, and then the government comes out and says, lads, hold off on the using your hose during the summer because we don't have that much water in the reservoirs. So you laugh at our government. Our government is just a joke, you know. It's like most governments around the world, absolute joke. We don't know who's driving the ship, but it's going around in circles.
Well, you think you'd have an overabundance of water, for sure.
You think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have access to loads of water. I'm not really issued. There's no issue there. We have a community water system here where I live, and there's only about maybe 300 people on that. So it's pretty okay, and it's only less than a mile for me. I know I could go up there if I really got stuck and bring up a sump pump and just connect it into my power bank, and off I go.
So some sort of like a cistern or collection?
Yeah, no, it's a huge, it's a 1 or 2 acre underground well system they have, and it's pumped in from various areas. Now, I do know that they tap into ours as well. When a local town near me is called Waterford, and whenever they get short, they can tap into ours as well. So ours is kind of probably the highest point around the area at the moment. So I'm 160 meters above sea level, so that would be about 300 feet above sea level. So
it's
okay. I'm not no danger of flooding up here. I well, better not be.
So in that interview that you had, you mentioned something that I didn't know. I know that you were in the Navy. I'm assuming, is that the Irish Navy?
The Merchant Navy.
The Merchant Navy.
Cargo.
You have to excuse me for being ignorant. I don't understand all the systems that you've got out there. But you said something about a survival shit hit the fan type of situation that you experienced on one of those ships. What was that?
Yeah, and the day I get, or I didn't, 6 months, I said it to 6 weeks, should have been, to 6 months of an ordeal first. There's merchant shipping, which is cargo and containers and grain and coal and everything else. I'm a merchant seaman. Then you have the Navy, which is the Navy, Army, Navy, and they, you know, fly helicopters and sail around the world in grey ships. We deliver them kind of ships, and that's what we were doing at that time in the 90s. And we were heading to Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia, which is now it's now Herzegovina and I can't even think of the name, Croatia. So yeah, we were heading down there in our 3,600 ton battleship, grey ship. And it's called, technically, it's a lightning barge. So it's a huge ship that comes alongside of big ships and lightens their load. And we take it in then into, because we can, a flat bottom, we can just go up a river or whatever. So when we got there, eventually, I think it took us close to three and a half months to get there, because we were stopping everywhere. This ship is not designed to go deep sea or to go out to sea, because it was flat bottom, so she'd roll a lot. So we were hopping from port to port to port, which is great, absolutely fantastic, because we were staying in hotels and seamen's missions as we were going along. So we came down the North Sea, down the English Channel, down the Bay of Biscay, around into the Mediterranean Sea, and we're farting around there for a while. And at the same time, we were taking cargo from A to B to C for the company to get us down there. So that was great. And then eventually we did get down there, and then the war had just started. So we were on anchor for ages. And our ship, as I said, is not designed for any kind of living. We had an ordinary stand-up fridge freezer, like the freezers, the domestic one you find in your house. Right. That was brought to us because we needed something for 3 or 4 days, and that's all that was equipped for 3 or 4 days. We had no main water tanks. I remember that distinctively. We had to have jerry cans of water all over the place. So now we're hitting the Mediterranean, 30 plus degrees, 40 degrees in some spots. So the water was gone fairly fast.
That's hot, right? Yeah, that's super hot.
That was hot, but air conditioning on the ship was a no-no as well. It was hand steered. I remember it was called EcoMaster, hand steering, in a very early design. In the 90s, they were only being developed. Basically, just two propellers that turned 360 degrees under the boat, and you can turn the ship any way you like. Great crack, but it was very tiring when you're standing there for 12 hours every day. So anyway, yeah, that was it. And we got kind of rescued later on after about 6 weeks at an anchor. But the occasional shot was shot at us because we're just sitting target, like we're not else to do. So people would shoot it at us near Dubrovnik. So yeah, all exciting.
So you're saying that the ship got stuck?
No, we couldn't go into port and we couldn't come back out of it because we had no fuel either. We'd run out of everything. So we were on anchor waiting on some company to come out and get us off and or give us bunkers. That's what they call the fuel. And that never happened because of the scenario going on. We were less important, you know, people were being killed everywhere. So we were just kind of left high and dry. And our company got us out after 3-4 weeks. And we were able to get home. We left the ship there.
So 3 or 4 weeks, you guys were on a survival
sort of status. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is great. We had a little dinghy that we were able to go in and out with. And we were able to meet, there was a local, Missions of Seamen is what they used to call organizations, especially for men at sea and whatever, personnel at sea. And they still have them in the States and all over the world. And they helped us out then. So we're talking about 1990 to 1991, in around that time. So there was no internet, there was no phones, there was nothing. Well, the phones were actually only just starting to come out. And mobile phones were only starting to come out. I had an 088 then later on. So, yeah, had interesting times. I remember making a phone call back to my mother at that time, and I had to use a VHF radio over to the merchant channels, and everybody from Mediterranean to Ireland in Europe could hear me. My mother telling me to make sure you eat your sandwiches and all this kind of shit. You know, I said, oh gosh, shut up. Yeah.
So we're up until that point, had you considered yourself a survivalist or a prepper at all?
No, I didn't. No, not in them days. That was all new to us. And even some of the food that we stored later on, we did start to store. I have it here in my house still. I can't even think of the name of it. Coming tins of food, tins of pies, like chicken pies or meat pies. I can't think of the name of it now off the top of my head. But they were lovely. I really got to love them yolks, but I got given a bollocking too as well because I kept eating them. And I said, lads, would you leave the survival food alone and stop eating them? So, yeah. So we were living off fish as well, like, so, you know, plenty of fish in the bed. And it was an interesting time. I was only about 22, 24 at the time. I'm not sure, somewhere around there. And I wouldn't mind going back to sea now, to be honest with you. But then again, it was another 20 years later then, and I got back into, when I met my wife here at the moment, we're 30 years now together, and we bought a sailboat there in 2007, and our plan was to, about 2008, 2009, sail. We're going to do 2 or 3 years, maybe down the Mediterranean and over to the Caribbean, and then possibly do the puddle jump into the Pacific. So that would have been another couple of years. And it was only for the last recession, 2007-8, that killed us because we lost a lot of money, so ended up selling the boat. But at that stage, I was already planning the long trips, so I'd have to, that's where my survival kick back in again. And that's where I took on, I've always been doing it since then, really heavily. You know, what do I need here? How do you preserve eggs at sea? Like, you use Vaseline. That's it keeps the air away from them. So you put them in Vaseline and put them in a press.
Never heard of that, no. I've heard of pickling eggs, but never heard of that.
And these are fresh eggs, so in Vaseline, and put them in the press, in a cardboard box or whatever way you put them in, and they're supposed to last 3 to 4 months, and I never got to test that theory. That's something maybe that's actually worth trying to see if it does work. Yeah, maybe some of the listeners there could comment on it and see
I
what
would love to. I would love for somebody to talk about that. Yeah, I'd like to
that
check
would be
that out.
something. We might try that. That's an easy one to test out, actually. You know, to put it in the press and come back and then cook it and cook it blindfolded. And see what state it's in. All of the things then that revolve around being at sea for long durations, then that's when I started looking at the food items I need to prep for. How long is a meal? What kind of meals you need calories per day? And then it just escalated and went on. You know the way it grows feet, grows legs, and it just takes off. So survivalist. I'm more survivalist than prepper, but now I'm gotten more prepper than survivalist. I started doing prepping as well, or surviving, sorry. I call it survivaling, where it's a backup for the prepping. So when the prepping is finished and you're failed or you have no more cans of food, survivaling, off you go and hunt food and light fires with a cigarette lighter.
I saw that on the video. I'm an advocate of the Bic lighter. I always think that you should have a fire starter and all that good stuff and the knowledge and all the different ways you can to start fires without one, but why not have a bunch of Bic lighters? Why not?
That's true, and I do have them at home, but I didn't have them on me at that day. I didn't have them. They're in my bag at home. What can I say? I didn't bring them. But I got a bit of grief from my friends over that. They said, "Yeah, I just see a text coming in earlier saying, oh, we had a whip around for you last night to buy a lighter." And I said, "That's great. When can I pick up the lighter?" "Oh, we only raised 20 cents, so we have to work on the rest."
Your description of the difference between prepper and survivalist was spot on. But if you think about it, a survivalist can figure out ways of starting that fire. A prepper is already prepared to start the fire by having the Bic lighters or whatever else they have.
Sure.
That's you look at it both ways.
To be honest, actually, it was something I didn't even think about. I thought the lads would have the fire ready for me when I got there because I did tell them heat the oven. I mean, we need fire lighting for about 2 hours. We need real hot heat before you put the deer into it. And that wasn't done. And then when we came up, it was damp. Everything was damp because it was what, November, December. So, you know, everything was damp. So they used tissue paper to try and light that, and that was so damp it wouldn't light. You saw that yourself. So
I saw it.
eventually we did get it lightened eventually, and yeah, it's just look, the next time we won't do a full deer, we just do a leg, and we know a leg works fine. I've done them plenty of times and they work great.
So the Irish Survivalist Group, ISG, when did you guys start that?
I started in approximately 2012, 2011, 2012. I used to do a few YouTube videos and of camping and stuff and hunting. And one or two guys in County Cork saw them and they said, "Hey, we're going out camping this weekend." And I said, "Do you have space for one more? And I'll bring the beer." And that was it. And so it was 18 degrees Celsius at night. At 12 o'clock at night, so that was one of the exceptionally hot days we had. And yeah, myself and Tony McHugh, the two of us hit it off straight away, and we're friends still to this day. But we started going out then every other weekend, and a few other people came out with us, and we said, look, why don't we just form a group on Facebook and see where it goes. And I think within 4 weeks, no, within 8 weeks, we were virtually on national television. I don't know what we did right or wrong, but people got wind of what we were doing, and they all wanted to come and see guys living, sleeping in the woods without a tent. I think that was the novelty. So we're using the hammocks and tarps. We're using bushcraft from Ray Mears. So I sent you a link for Ray Mears the last time. He's a national hero in England and Ireland. Like he's that guy is a fan. You know, you have Bear Grylls and he drinks his own piss. Ray Mears doesn't need to. He go catch a fish. He'll find the thyme, thyme, and pepper, and he'll flavor it and he'll cook it nicely, whereas Bear Grylls still drinking his own piss. So that's the difference between the two. Bear Grylls is the outdoor survivalist who does it all for show. Ray Mears is the country gentleman and square who does it properly and shows you how to do it without leaving any trace, which is great. And just if you just sit down and watch a few hours of his videos, you become he's good.
I did, and I enjoyed it. I really did.
Yeah, he can build a canoe from birch bark, you know, from the Indians he found it from the First Nation people in Canada. That was amazing because I actually built a canoe myself when I was 14. And I went up the river for 2 days with a tent in a sleeping bag, a tent in a sleeping bag wrapped in a plastic bag. And every couple of miles, I pull in and check it to make sure it's dry. And on the last time I got to it, it was bloody drowned it, and it was raining. And I had to sleep in a wet tent, 14 years of age, with a canvas and timber canoe that I built. It was so heavy, I couldn't get it out of the water. And yeah, that was actually my first major outing on my own at, 14 years of age. So, yeah, I'm never afraid to go out and test myself.
As far as the ISG is concerned, do you guys, do you stay in contact with each other? Are the outings that you do, are they the only things that you do, or do you guys do other things together?
Well, I've gone out to a few shooting clubs with the guys a few times. We all live in different parts of the country. The idea is that we have a camp in the center of the country, so everybody has an equal distance to go, which is great. That's where we picked Glengarra. That's the one where you see us mostly.
Yes.
The big tall trees, Glengarra. That's where we did the last podcast with you.
It's a beautiful place. You
know? Yeah, that's a fantastic spot down there. When you get the great weather, it's great. As for some of the guys, you know, O'Sheen is over in your part of the world the whole time. He will be back. I think we're going to have another camp now within the next month. So, yeah, we're doing it now for so long. Like, it's powerful. Cool. We get a lot of new people come along with us.
And young people, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And the new people come along, and they're all timid and afraid to ask questions. Like, two guys turn up one day. And they had a tent, and we thought, oh, it's a lovely tent, the whole lot. They forgot the sleeping bag, but they wouldn't tell us that they had no sleeping bags. So they slept wrapped to each other that night, and the next morning I said, what the hell is wrong with you guys? I had the best sleep in the world. I curled around the fire. I was fantastically cozy, and, you know, it was great. these guys in the same night rocked up, and they were frozen. That's the difference between being prepared and a survivalist. You can just adapt and just... Yeah, I won't tell you how I couldn't get back into my sleeping bag again or into my hammock again. That you have to leave up to your imagination. And if Tony McHugh was listening, it was your birthday that night, Tony. Somebody brought a bottle of brandy, so there you go. So you hear my pain. I couldn't get back into the hammock. Tried many times, just couldn't do it.
I have a hard time getting back into one of those hammocks even when I'm not drinking brandy.
Yeah. I'm after buying a lay flat hammock, and I had an awful time trying to get it. It's upstairs waiting to be launched this year. Apparently it's supposed to be as comfortable as a double bed. You hang it between trees, and it stays flat. It doesn't curve to your body or anything.
Oh, okay.
It also doubles as a tent if you want to take it to the ground if there's no trees. So I'm interested to test that one out.
When's your next outing going to be?
Yeah, we'll push it shortly now for me, early June. Make sure you have the nice weather and all that. I'll be putting the post up maybe in the next week or two, and we'll get that cracking on. You might turn up yourself. You never know. We might turn up over in your area.
We got plenty of room and lots of woods. You'd have a blast.
That'll do. I got an invitation to go over there last year, but because of work, I just can't get over to the States. Another TV company wanted to do I have something in mind that I want to do. I'll discuss it maybe sometime later on with you. Not in public, but I have something else in mind, and they wanted me to do a tour of kind of preparing food over from America. You know, because you guys have perfected everything. Deep freeze, not freeze dryers, and dehumidifiers and all that. Kind of, that's all been perfected by yourselves, where we're just following behind you. So I wanted to go over and kind of do a tour of, you know, going to the Quakers, have a look and see how they're doing their food, because they don't use electricity and all that.
That's right.
Go in and have a look at a few bunkers. Definitely have to go and look at a few bunkers. Go to Larry Hall. Say hello to Larry.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Military-industrial complex.
And we as a people will get to the promised land.
We will make
America strong again, proud again, safe again. We will make America great again.
Leave a voicemail to get on the show, speakpipe.com/tops, or the Shoot the Bull chat room at our Facebook group, Tops Bunker, or email us at shtf@topsbunker.com. Now back to the interview.
You were just talking a minute ago about something about coming over to the States. You said you had an offer?
Yeah, basically what we have here is a TV company came to me there a couple of years. I dealt with them a few years ago as well. They came to us asking, would we be interested in going over to the States to do a kind of tour of bunkers and food preparation, old style, and only generally can only be done in America. So I had to turn them down for last year, but I was trying to work around it this year, but my work is even harder now. So they want us to basically see how bunkers are built or what bunkers are like. Also the homesteading food industry in the States, how big it is. Well, what's the percentage of preppers in America at the moment?
Oh, I wouldn't even know, because a lot of them don't even consider themselves preppers. That's the problem.
Correct. Yeah. People don't even know. You're right. People have preserving jam at home and they don't even know that. You know, they have electric solar panels on a roof. They don't even know that they're doing it for a sake.
That's other right.
than paying the ESP for an electric bill. Myself here, I have them here at home, and they are the best thing I've ever done. I mean, it costs a lot of money to put them up, but our electric bills are in the minuses. We're in credit the whole time. We're in credit for now until December. I think we're going to be in credit again.
That's fantastic.
Absolutely great. There's only two of us in the house as well, so it's not too bad. And so we don't pay for water here. We don't have any water rates. They tried to bring them in a few years ago, and it was absolutely murder over that. Because, as you know, if you bring in a tax for a dollar next week, it's going to be two, and next it's going to be five, and then 10, and it never stops, and then they turn you off. So, yeah, they tried to do that here in this country, and the people didn't have it. They didn't want it. Each individual in the independent state in America, they all have different rules and regulations. So, you guys only got a two-party election system going on. I think we have about seven-party election system. So there's seven different parties trying to get into power. We had the same bunch of gobshites for the last few years here, 5 years, and there's three different political parties conjoined. So they're all taking turns being what we call a Taoiseach or a president. They do 6 months, one, 6 months, 6 months, 6 months, and it goes around, and it's just a big joke. One of them is the Green Party, and he is absolutely killing this country.
So what can they possibly get done in 6 months?
Well, they're the same party, and they're all in the coalition. It's called a coalition partnership, and they all have this agenda, and it's all the same. So the Green Party, the Fianna Gael, Fianna Fáil, all the same agenda, but the Green Party are doing the most damage. The others are just in it just for the paycheck, I think. So the Green Party's coming in. Everybody has to be riding a bicycle by 2030. no cars allowed in any of the cities by 2025.
Come on.
The taxes, the carbon tax got on bags of coal or timber. You can't light wet timber here because it generates too much smoke. They also want to get rid of cows here because their farts contain methane. I'm not making this stuff up. This is for sure, yeah. And these guys are in power over here. So,
well, what are you going to do for your beef, your meat, your protein?
The European Union want us all eating bugs over here. And they have another way of producing meat. It's bacterial meat or some artificial meat, they're calling it.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Don't trust them either. No. So that's coming down the line. I think that's coming in both parts of the world, over there and over here.
Live in a very Amish heavy area. There's a lot of Amish people that live here, and they, you know, they live off the land, and they wouldn't consider themselves preppers, but they are.
Yeah. Oh, they are totally. I could have huge respect for them. We have a few Quakers over here. Same thing.
Yep.
And a certain area in my, and not near me, but Actually, there is. Yeah, there's Quakers up the mountains, trust me, and they bring kids out on survival weekends and stuff, and they have a great setup. I actually went up there a few months ago. They have a fantastic setup, but again, they're their own little community, so I can't just rock up and ask them to join, you know. No, they don't ride around in horse cart and buggy. That's not allowed here.
Well, and some of the Quakers, they don't allow cameras either. Were they allowing cameras and phones and things there?
Cameras, yeah, they'd be okay here with that. Yeah, they'd be all right here.
Yeah.
They're fairly up to date. Like they use mobile phones and cars and stuff like that, but they're all, yeah, the Quakers, they create, their industries are furniture. They build furniture a lot. Homesteading food and as well is another thing they do.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, the interesting stuff. Not as interesting as you. You have thousands of them over there. They speak German.
Yeah, they do. So what are some of the current preps that you're working on right now at the house, you know, on your own time?
Oh, yeah. Well, at the moment, I have in my head, I was going to do some kind of podcast. I think the group wants me to start doing podcasts. I'm not sure yet. The topic's then sure we can, you know, it's like yourselves, you find a topic and go with the one that you're comfortable with. I've got all of the equipment I need. I've always had all the equipment. I always buy when I don't need it. And I just store it. I have a log cabin in my garden as well. I store a lot of stuff down there. So I have all the soundproof I'm just looking at here now. I've got the green screen surrounds. So it's going to do video tutorials as well. Just the usual. I just buy stuff whenever I see I need it. And my wife, she asked me to go to the shop the other day to pick up some milk. And sure, I came back at probably 150 quid worth of stuff. and one milk. The hardware shop is beside it, you know. And I'm going, oh, yeah, I need this. I need that. I need it. Two is one and one is none. Isn't that right?
That's right. Do you have gardens or anything there at your house?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we had raised beds for vegetables over the last couple of years. I want to get a greenhouse going. Now, my wife at the moment, she has the whole place in flowers and yeah, she's lovely. She loves gardening. So I'm trying to find a spot to take off her again. In fairness, she gave me a whole garden, but she ended up doing all the work because I didn't have time to do it. So I might try it again. But I think this year is going to be a special one because we've been pre-warned as well. Because the weather is so bad and for seed potatoes should have been sown in March. The latest is beginning of April. We're into nearly the end of April now. It's too late for some of the varieties of potatoes and veg. The ground is still, as I was saying, super saturated. So if you put seeds into the ground now, they'll just rot. And it'll cause like the potato plight or something like that. So they think there's going to be a run on potatoes this year. We're going to be buying from overseas. It looks like that anyway.
How is that even possible? I thought your neck of the woods was all about potatoes.
It is, yeah. So I don't know what's going to go wrong. I don't know what's happening. But I spoke to a few farmers, and they have said that they're worried. They are actually worried. I've never heard people talk the way they talk, but when they talk, they're shitting themselves. The cows have only just gone out this week from over winter. So the cows have only left the sheds now and out to the fields. You don't blame them. But the problem is the ground, the fields are so wet, the cows go in and they'll trample it and then they'll kill the grass seeds. So then there's nothing. So where do you go? How do you win there? They're using winter fodder from that they've used this year. They said they were just down nearly empty on it and they had to import a lot from England. And a lot of imported from the continent as well. I think they had an abundance of it. They didn't get as much rain as we did. So that way, like being an island, that helps as well. So it has happened over the years where the fodder and the food for the animals is run really, really low. So important, the government would pay a subsidy to help import a lot of it from the UK and France, which France is only 20 years in the ferry, really. And England, for me to get to England now, I could go leave now and I could be in England by 3 a.m. So 6 o'clock, 6 hours, I'd be in the UK in my car. And yourselves, I think you had strange weather this year, not just yourselves, but Canada as well.
Yeah, it's been a very strange year. It really has. I think it's the El Nino El Nina, actually. I think it was an El Nina season. So
La Nina, isn't it?
Yeah, La Nina. Yeah.
The water.
Yeah. And this one was the one where it made our winter a little bit milder, and supposed to make the summer a lot worse this year. What I can tell you is that the bugs came back really fast, because we need a lot of freezing, a lot like months of freezing in order to tame the bugs.
Yes.
When you don't, they're really, really bad.
Yeah, in the damp conditions. Yeah, I get you. We don't really suffer from mosquitoes here at all. We're very good. We don't have any dangerous animals. We have no snakes, no spiders. Nothing can kill you. Except
no snakes, no spiders.
Yeah, there's no poisonous spiders or snakes here.
Wow.
Unless you have a few that are pets. But there's no native snakes or spiders that can bite you or kill you here. We have no lizards. We actually don't have much. We have deer and wild boar, pheasants. That's about it. Those are rabbits.
I was just filming a new video yesterday. It's going to go up about actually, this one was for the members only section for the podcast. I did it yesterday, and it was about how to rid yourself of wasps and hornets, which we have really bad problem with. While I was doing that, came across a big old snake just sitting there right in the middle of the yard. You know, they're everywhere.
What kind of snake?
I don't know what kind of snake it was. I didn't ID it, but I will. I just haven't had time.
You didn't shoot it? I'm surprised.
I tried to catch it, but it took off too fast into the brush, and I wasn't able to get it.
No way. They're fast.
I did have to shoot a raccoon last week that came after the chickens. I had the chickens in the shop right now waiting for their coop to be built. And it tried to get in there, and well, I couldn't have that.
Yeah, I think you're gonna have to double barrel. How deep do you need to dig down into the soil with the fence? About 2 or 3 feet?
Yeah, you got to go down about a foot, but the big thing is making a curtain come out. So you don't want to go straight down. You want to go down and then towards you, away from the fence. So they dig, but they can't get under it. If that makes sense. It's kind of shape of an L shape.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, did you look into the alarm system that I sent you? The one that you could put on your driveway and pick up anybody walking up or down.
I did. Yep. So that works really good for you.
Wow, it's fantastic. Yeah, I don't even have to turn the cameras on anymore. Now, this thing alerts immediately. Somebody walks between the two pillars. And the dogs at home here, they also run straight to the window to look and see who's coming. Is it the postman or is it some bad guy coming in?
Yeah.
Did you ever find out who that guy was that was on your property?
Never did find out. And I've just been on alert ever since. And I don't know.
He was walking around. He had no rifle with him, or he wasn't shooting or hunting.
Nothing. Just a guy with a jacket over his shoulder, and had a white dog with him. And I don't know. And you know, it's not like you can just walk. You know, the road isn't right next to the house. You've got to walk a quarter mile from the road just to get up my driveway to my house.
Sure. Yeah. I get
so
that.
It was no accident.
He could have been just some neighbor 10 miles away that decided, oh, I know there's new people in the place. I'll go over and say hello.
Could have been. I suppose.
Stick your gun out and ask him later.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to do that here. If you shoot somebody in the back over here, you get done for it. But if you shoot somebody in the front and you drag him into your house, you still get done for it, but at least you won't get done for murder. You get done for manslaughter. So over here, if you shoot somebody, you probably only get about 7 years.
Well, it's a common misunderstanding, I think, because of TV shows and stuff, that in the U.S. you can just go around shooting people. That's not how it works. If you get into a firefight of any kind, even if it's self-defense, you are going to court. They are coming to take your guns. You're going to have to explain yourself.
And if you win the court case, can you get your guns back?
Oh yeah, you can after a little short time, but that's the thing. It's not just the cops don't just show up and you go, oh, self defense, and they go away. That's not how it works. You're going to court.
Uh huh. Proven innocent.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. It's the same. Probably the same method over here as well. I haven't shot anybody lately, so I don't know.
Yeah. The last thing you want to do is get into a gunfight. You don't want to shoot people. It's a bad thing.
No, we don't want to do that. At the moment, there's a spate of stabbings going on. You probably see it in Australia. Everybody's real quick to blame the immigrants, and it turned out to be a local guy from having mental issues. So I even jumped to conclusion that said, I bet it's a foreigner who has to come in now and just gone cracked. But no, he didn't. He just killed women because he was a coward.
Yeah, I know. We had the same issue here with the open border at our southern border. It's a real mess. And there's hundreds of thousands and millions a year that are just pouring across the border. And it's a bad situation because they're trying to pass laws now where they're going to be able to vote, no problem at all. And they're trying to pass laws now where they can get firearms. So you've got people that are coming across the border. We have no idea who they are. They're not citizens, and they're able to register to buy firearms. I don't think this is a good idea.
How are they able to vote, though? I don't get that. If you're not a citizen, how are you able to vote?
They changed the laws and make it so that they can, and that's what they're doing. It's and it's killing our two party system, which you talked about earlier, because they're coming across the border with Biden shirts on, thinking that President Biden is their savior. And this is, the worst thing you could be is an ignorant voter. You shouldn't vote if you don't know who you're voting for.
I think you said it in one of the podcasts there, that they're coming in with the Biden shirts and they're voting in City A, and then they're moving, be shipped down to City B to vote down there as well, because they can.
That's right.
Because it's set up that way, yeah. We've just had this discussion was going on today in on our national radios, that the immigrant problem in this country is so bad. They're allowed to get onto airplanes and fly into Dublin, but when they land in Dublin airport and they walk through the customs, they don't have any passports or immigration papers. So they're saying, hang on a second, I can't get on a plane, you can't get on an airplane without a passport. How are these guys getting on the plane and coming off without anything? Where's their passports gone? So it turns out, and the speculation is that the bosses are coming in passports and then taking them off from the plane, and then these boys are walking through. And they get a landing when they get here because it's raining, and then they're given a tent because we've no accommodation left to put them into. And it's this is not just here, but I was looking at a program in Canada, and it's even worse in Canada. And in America is the very same thing. Coming in through the back door, you guys got the Chinese. Bulk of them are Chinese, isn't that right?
Yeah, it was on the news this morning.
Invasion from China, and we got these guys coming in, and they're all fighting age. These guys are all in their 20s, 30s, strong, fit guys coming in, no women, no children, and there's thousands and thousands of them here, and thousands of them in the UK, and they're all Muslims. So I don't know. This world is a strange place.
Very small countries over there where you're at. I mean, Ireland and just all of the different little countries, they're very small. So how are they fitting all of these immigrants coming in? I don't see how they're doing it.
We're only a population of 4.5 million as of last year. Now we're 5.5. So, well, 5. So, I mean, we are a small country. We all know each other nearly. It's a rule of like 1 in 4. I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody else. And we all know each other. I mean, it is an extremely small country. And England has 75 million, and we have 4.5 million. So that'll tell you the size difference. And then these guys are just blitzing the country. They're absolutely scrounging everything. All the money is going on. These guys are own homeless, can't even get accommodation, because these guys are going ahead of them. So something's going to come ahead in the next year or two, and it's not going to be nice. And I think there's an explosion of wars going on in as well. You have Syria, and you have Iran. They're going to target Israel, and and then we have Ukraine getting messy over there. So what else is going to happen? You know,
I wanted to ask you, how does it feel being that? I mean, you are close to that, right? You are not close, but you're close enough.
Well, if I go down my main street in Waterford City, most people are speaking Ukrainian. You know, I was at another town today and I was right behind my school where I used to go to school. And I was watching these kids, and none of them spoke English. And I'd see no English-speaking people. I said, what the fuck is going on here? I mean, Christ almighty, ours is a small little town that I was in when I was brought up. It's a small town. Everybody knew everybody's business. And now these people are foreigners in our own land. And they're not even bothering to speak English.
That's so crazy.
I don't know. It is crazy. You could be speaking Chinese in another 10 years.
Is there any kind of a worry over there where you're at? And I would say Ireland and England or Great Britain. Is there any worry yes. about this big war that's going on right now with Iran and all them? And was it Israel?
Not so much with Israel and Iran, because that is a very good distance away from us. But the Ukrainian war is on our door. That's next to Germany, France, and that's us. Ireland, then we're an island, and so is England. And that's two of the best things I can about us, is that we're an island. But we used to be unique. You know, Irish people were always unique. We're friendly. We talk too much. We drink too much. And now these guys come in, they don't drink, they don't talk, they don't communicate, they don't mingle, you know, they don't eat the same food as us. They insist on these certain foods. So our governments are just lapping to them, giving them everything they want. And the rest of us have to pay for it. But the war in Ukraine, it seems to be just tipping away. It's over there. It's not gone nuclear yet. As I said, if Putin was going to die tomorrow morning, and they said he's sick, but nobody knows the real truth there. If he was about to die, I'd say, if I was him and I was about to die, I just hit the button just for the sake of it and say, here, let's go.
There's a lot of people that are worried that he will do that.
That is possible. It's a huge possibility. And if you're worried about that every day, you'll lose your mind. So I try not to worry too much. Mm-hmm. But in the back of my mind, I keep a very close eye on it. So if NATO gets involved, then NATO means the rest of Europe is going to go and get involved. And then we're going to become a war state. But we're a neutral country on paper. But
on paper. I mean,
we take in so many people. We have done in the last World War One, World War Two. We're always neutral, but we take the side of the allies, as in English and the French and so on. And it's the same. Every war is going to be the same. You know, we're all losers with no winners.
Well, we worry about the whole sleeper cell thing. You know, if you bring in all these different people, how are you controlling if they're getting together, you know, to work against the better interest of the country? That's what we worry about.
Yeah, I worry about that as well. I see it. I mean, I watch you guys very closely, and I don't often comment too much, but I do watch it closely, and I'd be worried as well. Yeah, I'm worried for the same sake as you guys are over here. That there has to be a worldwide conspiracy going on here that we're not aware of.
Sure.
It's coming. It's coming. Something's coming. Something wicked this way may come.
Let me ask you this. Is there anything you would like to say to, let's say, some of the young preppers like that show up to your groups? Is there anything that you would say, that one or two things maybe that you could think of that could help somebody get started in prepping and survival?
As a young person entering into the prepping, they shouldn't have to be in this in the situation that we're in now, where they shouldn't have to worry. We should be doing the worry as the adults. But a young person, you know, a teenager comes in and I have to have 10 cartons of sugar and 50 cartons of flour. They shouldn't have to worry about that. You know, they should be able to enjoy being a kid. They should enjoy being a child. And let us do the worrying. But I'm saying that it's a great hobby to get in. And if you want to be an active outdoor person, by all means, get involved now. Because although when I was that age, my father never brought me out camping. I had to go and do it myself. And I know that I'd bring kids out. I don't have kids either, but if I had my own kids, I'd bring them out for sure. But I've seen my brothers doing it, bringing their young kids, and I've seen their interest. I know they're going to bring their kids as well. So it's a righteous hobby, and it's a great one to be. But don't worry. Don't lose too much sleep. Let the adults do that for you. Let us worry for you.
Absolutely. Well spoken.
That's my 2 cents worth.
All right, man. I want to catch you guys on your next outing for sure. Maybe talk with you for 5 or 10 minutes while you're out there. Say hi to the group. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll do, Keith. And thanks. Look, I appreciate the chat. I enjoyed it, actually. Yeah, could do with a chat every now and then. It's no problem.
Absolutely.
I sign off. So take care, then.
All right. You do the same. Thanks, Frank. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Frank and his group, the ISG, are spreading awareness of preparedness and survivalism and clearly making a difference in Ireland, with so many potential Irish preppers joining the ranks. I love chatting with Frank. He reminds me that although we're worlds apart, we share the kindred mindset of preparedness. Thank you, Frank, for keeping us all connected. My prepper brothers and sisters, stay prepped, stay happy, thanks for listening, and good night.
I always try to take the long way home. skip familiar places that I know. I always seem to find the open road. I'm looking for it everywhere I go. Hey, this is life in the badlands, badlands. Forget about the reason, reason. Don't know what you're doing, doing. I try to catch the feeling, feelings. You make me smile. I just stay a while. This is life in the badlands. This is life in the badlands. Always making friends along the way. So pack your bags and let's leave for the day. Take your worries, make them go away. Turn the music up and let's escape. Let's escape. This is life in the badlands, badlands. Forget about the reason, reason. Don't know what you're doing, doing. But try to catch the feeling, feelings. You make me smile. This is life in the badlands, badlands. Forget about the reason, reason. Don't know what you're doing, doing. I try to catch the feelings, feelings. You make me smile.